and welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy show. I'm your host, Yvonne Brown, coming to you live from Chicago, Illinois, as I do every second Saturday of the month at 2 p.m. Central Time. Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy is an interactive live internet talk radio show that focuses on how to take advantage of the opportunities that life sends your way. The program explores obstacles overcome by ordinary people with extraordinary results and what inspires or motivates them to take positive actions that make their dreams a reality. I know a little about that myself, as I've had 10 careers. My first career after arriving in the United States from Jamaica as a fashion model, and then I was a singer on the MCA label, a corporate consultant for Accenture, and today I'm a professional speaker, trainer, author of 5 books, and 3 blogs, certified professional coach, leadership and confidence coach for Forbes Coaches Council, certified John Maxwell coach, speaker and trainer, and a radio show host. So let's set the tone for today's show. Jason Silva said, "There's always going to be the circumstances you can't plan for. There's always the unexpected relevance and the serendipity," which is part of what we're going to talk about today.
Today's show is brought to you by JAD Communications International. They specialize in personal development, coaching, and training. JAD Communications focuses on improving communications, managing people and expectations, increasing interpersonal skills, promoting respectful communications, and conflict resolution. Visit them online at www.jadcommunications.com and use the contact page to request more information.
We have a fantastic show for you today. Joining us later will be Louis Silverman, who will be taking your calls and questions. So be sure to call us at 646-381-4198. And by the way, if you are listening online and you decide to give us a call, please mute your computer first. Today's show is titled, "Not Having a Plan with a Capital T Does Not Mean Failure." Here's the thing. Most graduates come out of school and think, "What now? What should I do for the rest of my life?" This month's guest chose a different path, one of the small journeys that led her to where she is now. And that's where I met her, at one of the locations where my seminars are held. I've provided seminars all over the country and internationally, and I love the Summit Executive Center and the Summit West in Chicago. So imagine my surprise when I learned that it was a woman-owned enterprise. I knew that I had to learn more, and when we spoke, and I found her story so inspirational that I invited her to be a guest on the show to share with others that not having a plan with a capital P does not mean failure. But before we invite her to join us, let me tell you a little bit about her. Louis Silverman has been the owner and managing director of the Summit Executive Center, where I spent many of my leadership and communication seminars for more than 19 years. In March of 2015, a second property, Summit West, was added. As the only certified women-owned business in the meetings industry, she created a niche business for herself, as well as pioneered the concept of a conference center in an urban environment. Now, prior to opening the Summits of Chicago, Silverman had sales manager positions at the KPMG Center for Leadership Development and Hyatt Hotels. She has served on the board of directors for Meeting Professional International, Chicago Area Chapter, MPICAC, as well as both the North America and International Board of Directors for the International Association of Conference Centers, that's the IACC. Silverman, by the way, received the Pyramid Award, IACC's highest individual honor for long-lasting commitment to education, in 2014. You can visit the business online at www.summitcenter.com. Welcome to the show, Louise.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me begin by asking, what happens if you come out of college and you still don't know what your plan is?
Well, I think actually, you know, today is very similar to when I came out of college. So I graduated in 1983, and the business market was not easy at that time, and similarly today. And I think the stress that people have when, you know, their dreams, and if they did have a plan and it isn't working out, or people like me that really still hadn't figured it out, that we realize, or you can realize, that you don't have to necessarily find the next step of going immediately into a job. And so what I did was I talked to some friends in college, and we all sort of said, if we don't get the job we want, we're going to just move out to Aspen for 6 months and sort of postpone the inevitable. And that started me on a path that I ended up staying there almost 2 years. And at that point, I think I was more ready to tackle and to figure out what next and what maybe I wanted to pursue. Because in college, things had changed. I thought that Chicago was going to have another Columbian Exposition, actually. And my advisor in high school had sent me down a path that actually was taken off the table because Chicago pulled out of the bidding process. And I suddenly found myself senior year thinking, oh my gosh, what am I going to do with my life now? So for me, making that choice to move out to Aspen, I was the only one that stayed longer than our original plan of the 6 months. The rest did go back and get jobs soon thereafter, after the one ski season was over. But I loved the job that I found out there. It certainly wasn't a life-fulfilling job, but it was. I got enough money that I could ski and enjoy and live out there. And so then they said, how could you leave before you stay for the summer? The summer in Aspen's even more beautiful. And then, of course, at the end of the summer, well, how could I leave? It's going into the next ski season. So it's a little bit of a revolving door. But it was just a phenomenal opportunity, and it also allowed me to mature a little bit. And when I did start the job process and try to figure out what I really wanted to do, I was a little bit older, had a little bit more experience, had a little bit more confidence, as I'd lived completely on my own and was completely self-sufficient for the first time. And so I think it boded me well to start the next chapter of my life, so to speak.
Wow, that's fascinating. And I love how serendipitous that kind of revelation is, where you think you're heading in one direction and life just kind of says, oh, why don't you try this for a minute? Let me ask you this. Should we have what do you think of a gap year or trying on careers to see how they fit and feel?
You know, I personally am a huge fan. I don't have children of my own, but I certainly tell all my nieces and nephews and all my friends' children that, you know, there's such pressure on kids these days. I mean, starting, you know, in Chicago, even getting into the right high school or the right grade school and then college. And you know, there's just such pressures on them. And I keep saying, let them go do something that gives them some confidence and just an experience that they won't necessarily, once you start your job, it's hard to take a break and to really, you know, have that opportunity to really go out in the world and do something that you're not necessarily going to do for the rest of your life. And I think those experiences really set you up as a stronger individual. And I highly encourage everyone is be gap year before starting college, which I think some people aren't quite ready even to start college right away. And they're, you know, it's just assumed you will. And I think that's in our society, that's a mistake. I think what they do in Europe, where they give you that time, I think is in some ways a lot better than the way we've structured it. Or, you know, starting that college, I mean, that career immediately, or going immediately into grad school, why not take a break, get a job in the field you're in and make sure that's really where you want to be before heading to grad school? I think a lot of people just feel they're on this track that they have to follow, and it might not even be their path, but, you know, the pressure of the path of their peers or their parents or whatever. And so I'm a big proponent of maybe not quite doing it the way it's planned, but just sort of taking it easy and following a path that might be a little different, but will end you up being maybe happier.
Yeah, that's true. And as I was mentioning a few minutes ago, the president of the United States, his youngest recently just said she was taking a gap year instead of going directly to college, and the whole world just started having a meltdown. Because for some reason they thought she shouldn't do that. And I think if the individual feels that they would like a gap year in between college or right after college, then they should do that because it makes it a less stressful event, whatever that next event is, if you have a gap year.
Yeah, and I think the experiences that you can have so often, you know, just think of her. She's, you know, living in the White House. I mean, she's so protected. And to go have a gap year somewhere, and I don't know where she's thinking of going, but what an amazing experience. I'm sure she still will have her little Secret Service with her. But to be able to go and just be normal. You know?
She's going to do some kind of fast food work at McDonald's or something, and that made people crazy. but in my opinion, it's irrelevant what she does because the kind of skills that you learn from working a job, whether it's at McDonald's or elsewhere, it's all about the same things: being responsible, you know, preparing yourself to have a job later on. So it doesn't matter if it's at McDonald's.
Yeah, I know a girlfriend of mine had asked if her daughter could internship for me one summer, and they lived out in the suburbs about 25 miles from the city, and it's not that they didn't ever come to the city, but their daughter had never come, like, on her own, and she did it between her senior year in high school and freshman year in college, and at the time, we didn't think anything of it other than I was trying to help her out. And so she came, her grandfather took her on the train the first time. She'd never taken the train. And then walking from the train station to our North Michigan Avenue location. And I think she was mortified. I know her grandfather. And, you know, she was mortified that, you know, he was walking her in. And then by the end of the summer, you know, she was staying late and going to events at Millennium Park and doing all these other things. And her mother said to me later, you know, none of us really thought about it, but just that freedom and that responsibility or just the confidence that she gained from that experience going off to college, she's like, I'm not sure she would have been the same kid going to school if she hadn't had that summer where, you know, she really, you know, owned up to this aid team. Being at work at 7 a.m. for, you know, a young girl is not easy, and having to rely on the train schedule and knowing she has to be there. And so all those experiences was just really fabulous, and it was something we never thought of when we, you know, were offering her the job. Her daughter Jenny later told me it was the best thing she'd ever done. And not the job so much, because the job itself wasn't, you know, somewhat medial labor for the summer, doing a lot of different things, helping us out around the conference center. But I think just learning the city and doing that on her own, it empowered her to a level that, you know, to this day she says, you know, I might not be the same person if I hadn't had it, which I think is pretty cool.
Well, of course, it builds self-esteem, you know, and it builds self-confidence. Mm-hmm. Learn to believe in yourself, and you go, oh, I can do that. And so you might try something else later on as opposed to being fearful of stretching out. So that brings me to my next question, which is, why is finding a job that you enjoy more important than a paycheck?
You know, it was interesting. I was on a panel. I was asked to be on a panel, and I think that's how you and I originally started talking. That was, I went to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and it, Success in the City was the title of it, and they invited a number of alumni to speak. And I was hesitant to do it because I'm not a big public speaker. But then when I saw who the other panelists were, I was like, I'm really not fit to be on the same stage. And it was so interesting hearing them all. You know, two of them were definitely chasing the money. That was the important thing. And this is why I did this, because of the money. And this is why I did that. And clearly they're happy and they're successful and you can't knock that. But it's so interesting because that's so not the path I went. I, you know, really went down the path of what am I going to do that's going to make me happy? And I really have always enjoyed being in service. And you know, I volunteered a lot when I was young, and, you know, I'm always the one with my friends. I'm a Cancer, so I'm always the one, like, trying to take care of everything. And so as much as I didn't know what the world of, you know, conference services or convention services or hotels, what that even meant, I certainly didn't go to school for that. But as I was talking to people and trying to figure out my career, they recommended. So I worked at the front desk of the Hyatt Regency from the 3 to 11:30 shift for 6 months. Then I was in housekeeping for a year just to get the management title on my resume. And, you know, here I'm like, I have a college degree. I can't believe I'm working at the front desk or, you know, in housekeeping. But then I was able to quickly transition into the sales and conference services role, and never made a lot of money, but loved it and was working, you know, an inordinate amount of hours. And the gratification that I got from successful meetings and my clients coming back really is what inspired me, not the booking of the meeting. And so most salespeople, they have you sort of pigeonholed that their success is the booking, and they keep trying to get me into doing larger meetings or meetings more far out. And I, you know, really resisted it, and it really impacted my salary because I didn't want to take on those kind of roles because that's not what made me happy. And I think that in the long run, you're always, you know, you better enjoy what you're doing at work because you spend an awful lot of time there. And I say it to my staff all the time, you know, if you're not happy here, go find another job. I mean, it's not easy being in service. So if you don't truly enjoy it and want to be in that role, then go find something else. And it might be money if that's really what drives you. But I think most people, that's not the case.
I completely agree with you because I'm with you. Do what you love. And even if you start out doing what you love and you get to a certain point and you go, I don't love this anymore, it's okay to go do something else that you now love because we change as the years go by, you know? So that's how come I'm One more thing, though. Well, an additional thing. Let's talk about the hours worked versus how opportunities present themselves. Can you speak a little to that?
You know, I think that it does happen. I mean, people always say to me, oh, did you plan on opening your own conference center? No, I didn't plan on it at all. It never even crossed my mind, to be perfectly honest. But to put yourself, if you're in a position of where you enjoy where you are, opportunities do present themselves. And that's exactly what happened to me and a number of other people that I know. So it's not completely unique. But I just, you know, when I finally decided it was time to leave Hyatt, and I'd been there for 10 years, loved it, but I was also completely burned out, and I was working inordinate hours. The White House was one of my clients, and so it was Bush 41's election year, and so then I was with him. Well, I started with his first election and then ended when he was defeated by Clinton, and so anytime he came to Chicago, they stayed at the Hyatt. And so I was quite involved in all of that. And so my life really was work. And I didn't realize that I wasn't seeing my other friends very often. I was always canceling because I was so tired. Doing what I love, but tired. And so, but I realized if I really wanted to have more in my life, that I had to leave. Because I was never going to get balance of life staying at the Hyatt, especially in the early 90s when hotels were hurting a little bit and there was just so much more pressure on us. And so I talked to colleagues in the field and ended up going to work. KPMG was my client at Hyatt, and they opened this conference center at North Michigan Avenue that I now own. And so, you know, I first took the job there. My boss at the time made it very clear that we both knew this was not, you know, a forever move for me. It was certainly not nearly as glamorous or exciting as my job at the Hyatt. And so, you know, we both knew, but at the time it was perfect because what he promised was that I could work Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. And that was the most important thing in that time in my life, so that I could actually go out. That's when I met my husband. That's when I mean, it gave me the opportunity to really live again. And then I found out that KPMG was selling the conference center. I didn't know why, but was able to say, hey, wait a minute. It sounded like they were going to sell it to Oracle. And Oracle was going to sort of take the service out of it. They were just going to sort of run it as a computer lab area. And they assured us we would all have jobs, but that's not where we wanted to be. We didn't want to just be a building, a structure, and work at that. We loved the service that we were providing. And so I was able to meet with KPMG and, you know, higher ups there, some of the management team, and say, I'm not sure why you're selling, but this is why. I still think you need this conference center. You built it not that long ago. You had a need. You still use it all the time. You still have that need. And the only way that you could continue to be able to have this facility in Chicago is if you sell it to me, because if you sell it to Oracle, it will no longer be the facility that you can train at. And I don't know if that's why they accepted the offer. I'll never quite know, but they did. And so it's just being in the right place. It's having the passion. It's deciding, you know, to try to fight for something that you believe in. And it sometimes works out for you. Not always, but sometimes. And I was very fortunate.
Well, you know, I'm glad you shared that story, because that is how life is. You know, first you're doing what you love, and then in just the scheme of things, opportunities will present themselves. Sometimes, though, people don't recognize it as such when it presents itself, and it slips away from them. So I have to commend you on recognizing that opportunity and being bold enough and having the courage to go to them and say, hey, you know, and presenting it to them in a manner that says, let's not destroy what you've created so far. Let's keep it going forward. Because who'd say no to that?
Right. But it's interesting, too. Excuse me, I'm going to cough here again. It's interesting because I almost did miss the opportunity. When I first started there, about maybe 9 months in, and I had said I had given a commitment that I would work there at least a year, and I thought no more than two. So we're getting close to the first year, and I had so enjoyed just having a personal life and enjoyed working in the conference center, but not having too many responsibilities and all that. But I knew I needed more for my work life. And so I was constantly in contact with a number of the people that worked for the Bush White House. And obviously they were out of, they were no longer needed in Washington as Clinton had taken over power. So a bunch of them were in Atlanta for the Olympics. And so they were trying to talk me into going to the 96 Olympics. And I almost took that job and left, and then I wouldn't have had the opportunity to stay. So, it's, you know, at the time, it's so interesting how it worked out, because how glamorous it would have been to go to work on the Olympics, right? And so I was really seriously weighing that opportunity. But I have to be honest, though, or I'll fess up loudly. If you ever are on a job interview, make sure you pay a little more attention than what I did. I was so busy at the time at the conference center, and I knew what job they were pursuing for me. And they wanted me to come down and meet with them. And I, at the last second, had to cancel because something came up at the conference center that needed my attention. And I felt that's my job. I owe that the priority over going to this interview. And so they said, well, let's do a phone interview. And then they asked me about Dino. I sort of feel like I'm Gary Johnson here. And I'm like, what's Dino? And that was the mascot for the Atlanta Olympics. And I never recovered because I didn't know who Dino, you know, like you could tell. They were all excited about hiring me. And then suddenly it wasn't so great. I hadn't done my homework. So But anyway, life, you know, when you think the door's shut, it's bad. Then I got this great opportunity to take over the center. So you never know.
You never know. But you know what? All of those things you just shared match the way I live my life. Because I believe in the law of attraction. And I believe that the universe knows what you really, really want. And so it presented you with two paths, you know, and you made your choice. And when you made your choice, it said, okay, well, so you want the other thing then. All right, I'll clear the path and make that work out for you. And then that's what happened. But I think it's funny that you, who is that?
Right, you know, it was a purple giraffe. I'll never forget now.
Now you remember, but also there is another valid point that you made that I want to return to, which is when you're going to do an interview, make sure you do a lot of your homework first, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, who would have thought that would have been like sort of the sticking point? Or maybe that was 101, and I just bypassed that. I'd done my homework on the logistics of the village, because that's what I was going to be working with, but I didn't think of the broader picture of the Olympics itself. So, yes, no, it was a little embarrassing. So.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that wasn't where you were supposed to be. You're right where you're supposed to
be.
Let's talk about having the courage to pursue those opportunities if they were not part of your plan.
You know, I think you just have to have faith in yourself. And when opportunities present themselves, and if it's something that you want, even if you, I mean, I, with the opportunity with this conference center, I was the number two. I didn't even really know the players. And so I kept saying, well, they're not, if they turn down, you know, the manager of the facility at the time, that was the number one, why would they accept mine? And my father is the one that says, you never know. And what does it hurt if we don't, you know, you just sit down and present to them. They might turn you down too, but you never know. And as I said, I'm not sure exactly why they accepted my offer and they hadn't accepted John's, but they did. And the rest is now history. So it's great.
Yeah, well, you know, part of possibly why they didn't accept your his offer is earnestness. You know, if you are really committed and truly excited and really love the thing and are sincere and authentic, when you're talking about it, those kinds of emotions reveal themselves. And someone who is going to sell something, they can tell if it's passion or if it's just, yeah, I think I'll do that. You know, so and also it's wonderful when your dad gives you that vote of confidence, you know, because it gives you like one more feather in your cap where you're going, he's on my side. So it bolsters your confidence. So you walk in there and have that talk, that discussion and that negotiation from a place of strength.
Right. And, you know, and just sort of the moral, the message of, you know, what do you have to lose? If you don't try, you never know, right? So you might not get it, but what do you really have to lose? And it's a great exercise just to go through thinking why you want this facility and the responsibility of taking it on. And, you know, as you were saying, you know, I certainly don't think that John had any less passion than I did. I always questioned if they felt he didn't just have the business sense and they were worried for him that it might have been too much of a burden to take on in case it wasn't successful. So, you know, you never know. But I think, you know, it's a great exercise to go through and sky should be the limit, right? You know, don't pigeon yourself to, well, I'm at this position. I can't sort of jump over someone else. You can try. You can ask. You can present and see how the chips lay. Yeah.
Absolutely. So now I'm curious because I'm wondering, okay, so you got the Executive Center there on Michigan Avenue, and what was the impetus for Summit West? What propelled you there? Because that's fairly recent, right?
That is. So, well, first of all, I have to start with it. I expanded at the original location at the worst time ever. So, you know, once again, the best laid plans don't always turn out. We had our greatest years, 2005, 2006, 2007. So I decided to expand at that location, and because we had the need, the clients were needing more from us. And so we expanded, we added the 50% increase of space, and then, you know, the bottom fell out, and, you know, you could shoot a cannon through the facility for about a year and a half. And so to say that I was then going to go expand again is shocking, because I was so gun-shy after the 2008 expansion. But the reason I did is, you know, talking, once again, I think networking and really not isolating yourself, especially if you're an independent business owner, it is hugely important, I think, to have conversations with other people that sort of understand your position. And it's not easy to find. I know there's a lot of presidential groups you can join or other things, and I've never gone down that path, but I've utilized my colleagues around the world that are in the conference center industry. Very few are similar to me that they're independently owning them, but they might understand, you know, my position a little bit more. And after talking to a number of them for years, first of all, they discounted a non-residential conference center. They always sort of thought of me as the bastard child of the meeting term conference center. But now that's the largest growth sector. So when I really was at the forefront. So it's exciting about that. But they kept saying there's no value to your business if you only have one. And so that, and it's not that I'm trying to sell my business, but you always want it to be of value, so when the time comes, that I'll be better positioned to put the entity out there on the marketplace. And so that was the main reason that I was looking. And then just once again, having conversations, having relationships.
I lost you for a minute there. Are you there?
Oh, I'm so sorry about that.
You're back.
I apologize. The phone call came through and I turned, I declined it quickly, but I didn't realize it went to hold. So where did I lose you? I kept talking and I didn't realize you didn't have me.
Relationships and having those conversations kind of helps with the networking and making things happen.
Right. And so I'd had the conversation. So when an opportunity came up for a sublease, my broker reached out to me, and so I was able to do it in a very baby step way, and do it as a sublease, so it's not such a huge financial responsibility, because obviously on the sublease, you know, you're not usually paying market rate. And so it worked out great, and I had also knew at that time that I could then reevaluate at the end of that sublease, is this successful? Do I want to stay in that location? Do I want to expand in that location? Do I want to get rid of the ninth floor at the original location? Do I want to keep it all? And it just is giving me this breadth of opportunity, which I would not have had. So it's worked out beautifully.
Oh, that's wonderful. Because see, that's relationships for you and people understanding you and you getting the word out. Because if you hadn't been in that frame of mind, your broker probably would have never mentioned that opportunity
right
to you.
Absolutely.
In the second place. So serendipity is happening with you all over the place. And so now another question that occurs to me is, why be a woman-owned enterprise? Were you always a woman-owned enterprise? Is that how you started?
You know, no. And I was told that, you know, you should pursue this, and I have to admit that the paperwork that goes into it is somewhat daunting, and I never made it a priority. And so I don't think I got my designation for about 5 years. I'd started it, and I would look at it, and I just didn't go back to it. But it really is important, and companies value that they're working with either minority-owned businesses or women-owned businesses, military-owned businesses, they get if they're at all working with the federal government, they get credits for doing that. But I think that corporate America really does want to do right. And so most companies say in their sort of bylaws or the mission vision statement, you know, I want to have X percent of our business that's supporting whatever, you know, MBs, WBEs, or minorities. So it's worked out very well for a number of my clients. It's just been hugely, beneficial to them that I'm a WBE. It's an easy way for them to get their credit of working with a woman-owned business, and it's one that's very unusual, right? Usually it's much more procurement-oriented type tasks, and usually the supplier diversity officer is under procurement. So that needing to fall into that is really unique. And to be honest, sometimes it's a struggle because they can't sort of find me because they're not looking for that type of role. But once they do, they are just elated. And so it works.
Hello?
Yep.
I lost you.
You lost me? I'm here.
Yes. Oh, okay. And you were saying once they find you, it's great.
Absolutely. I mean, it's much more beneficial for them than for me. I mean, for me, obviously, any customer that comes back is beneficial. But it really helps them. And actually, we've tied in the meetings department with the procurement a number of times to, you know, let them know the spend that they're using with us. And so we're having successes on internal teams that weren't there before either, and they're benefiting from that. So they're all excited when we're able to do that as well. So.
Yeah, and I was very excited when I found out that you are a women's business enterprise, because when I started my own business, I worked with the Women's Business Development Center here in Chicago on Michigan Avenue, and that's what they're all about. They help businesses be certified, and so if you do any business with them at all, they tell you how important it is to have that designation,
right?
Because companies are looking for that as part of their giving back to the community and the community reinvestment and things like that, so that they, you know, can say that's one of the things that we do as an organization. So
Kudos to you for doing that.
Do you have any final comments for our listeners, you know, who may be thinking, I don't have a plan?
I think about, you know, the moral of my message really is that's okay. And, you know, it's important that you go out and maybe try on a few different things just to see what really does work. I mean, how many people really pursue their careers exactly what their college degree is in? I think statistically it's a very small percentage. And so people aren't even thinking when they get out of college or when they're changing careers that they think they have to stay where they've been before. And I think that's such a mistake. And trying to broaden it to really what makes you happy in the long run, good things will happen. I'm a firm believer of that.
I completely agree with you. And I'll just add one more thing that you said, which is have a level of awareness and be present when opportunities present themselves so that you can recognize them and they don't slip away from you.
Yes, I agree.
Thank you very much, Louise, for an inspirational and informative interview. And thanks to all of you for joining us today for the Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy show. Join us again next month on the second Saturday at 2 p.m. Central Time. Until then, let me leave you with this final thought by two of my favorite people. John Steinbeck said, a journey is a person in itself. No two are alike. And all plans, safeguards, policing, and coercion are fruitless. We find that after years of struggle that we do not take a trip. A trip takes us. And John Maxwell, my mentor, said, and I quote, Failed plans should not be interpreted as a failed vision. Visions don't change. They're only refined. Plans rarely stay the same and are scrapped or adjusted as needed. Be stubborn about the vision, but be flexible with your plan. Thank you very much, Louise.
Thank you.
Remember to find yourself, live your dreams, and be happy. And also follow the show at www.blogtalkradio.com/Yvonne-F-Brown. Then leave your comment about today's show. And if you have a topic you'd like us to cover, just leave us a comment and we'll do it for you. Thanks, everyone. Louise?